Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott.
Well?
I want to be alone.
Where have you been? I suppose I can cancel the Vienna contract?
I just want to be alone.
You're going to be very much alone, my dear madam. This is the end.
Greta Garbo's plea from the 1932 film Grand Hotel is the best known of her storied career. She later left the spotlight and chose to live the rest of her life privately and anonymously, an exit considered freakish by the public and a press which shadowed her the rest of her life. Today, we know far more about everyday citizens whose allure falls far short of Garbo's. Hundreds of millions of people share photos, videos, opinions, and other details of their intimate lives online. Meanwhile, our personal spending habits, web searches, communications, and possibly even DNA can be monitored, analyzed, and sold without our knowledge. In Privacy, the latest entry in Picador's Big Ideas, Small Book series, writer Garrett Kaiser goes beyond the technological and legalistic conversations about privacy to consider moral, social, and economic dimensions of privacy. Garrett Kaiser, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on.
Garrett, so often I begin by saying Garrett Kaiser, or our guest name, joins us from blank, and I was hesitant to do that with you just because of your own notion of privacy.
I appreciate that, but I'll go so far as to say from northeastern Vermont.
Well, you do make a point not to open this book with the definition of privacy. Why not?
For one practical reason, first of all, I thought that it would kill reader interest to have an abstract definition start the book. But also trying to define privacy in any legalistic or even broader philosophical sense was not my primary objective. I was going on the assumption that most of us have enough of a sense of privacy that if you pick up my book, you have a gut notion what you feel when something is violated and that you would call your privacy.
I think we do all have a personal sense of what privacy means to us. One thing you say commonly, it exists only by choice. That, though, assumes that we are much more in control of, let's say, our numeric trails and shared information than we really are. What do you mean by choice?
What I wanted to do is I wanted to distinguish privacy from loneliness, from alienation, from isolation. First of all, privacy isn't only solitude. It can be, you know, an intimate association with another person we would protect with privacy just as we would our solitude. But in some of the writing, some feminist writers, I found statements like, women have been given too much privacy. And I understood exactly what was being said, and I agreed with it. But I disagreed with the use of privacy, since I would say that once privacy ceases to be a choice, then it's no longer privacy. And to say women have too much privacy, or historically were given too much privacy, is like saying that a rape victim was given too much love, or that a slave was given too much work. I think work is a beautiful thing, and love and privacy are things that are either chosen or else, if they're imposed on us, there's something else. You know, I mean, one of the most beautiful things a human being can do, in my view, is to sing. But if someone forces you to sing, it's something else. It's humiliation.
Well, you ran into this yourself when somebody that you'd been sharing letters with over the years actually shared them publicly. Something you took great offense at, something that he felt was pretty innocuous.
Yes, and perhaps because his sharing was not public in the sense of publishing, but rather just circulating them in a wider circle than I had intended. It certainly wasn't done maliciously, and in fact, it was done to honor our correspondence. But here was a case where two people had different notions of privacy or what the boundaries of privacy were, and probably mine, within our current social context, are more eccentric than his. And what different people regard as private varies. And I think that when we discuss privacy and when we negotiate our own privacy, we need to acknowledge that. That's one end of the spectrum. The dangerous other end of the spectrum is then to say that for that reason, privacy is completely relative. Relativism plays well in our kind of culture of our society of gross economic inequality, because if you can say values are relative, then that means, as the late Tony Jute pointed out, that you don't need to worry too much over the fact that you have them and other people don't. It becomes, well, you know, comfort in the winter is sort of like a relative culturally based thing, and some people like to be warm in their houses in the winter, and other people like to freeze to death. You know, what's good for them and good for me are not the same good. Well, this is entirely disingenuous. When we apply that to privacy, I would say the same thing.
We're talking with Garrett Kaiser. He's an author, and he's a regular contributor to Harper's, who wrote an article about privacy that sort of caused a furor online and became the basis for a book called Privacy. It's the latest entry in Picador's Big Ideas Small Book series. I'd love to hear you expand upon that a little bit more, this connection between sharing information and the widening gap between the rich and the poor. You write several times in the book about wealthy people having more privacy than the poor, which struck me because I think of, you know, so many middle-class people are active on Facebook and are sharing their information quite willingly. So I'd love to hear you tease that out a little and help us understand.
First, I would accent the word you used, which is willingly. Mm-hmm. If you're sharing your information willingly and knowingly, by another person's standard, you might not be respecting your own privacy, but we can hardly argue that your privacy is being violated when you're doing what you want to do with your information. You have the right to expose yourself to the extent that you want to. But there is a definite class divide in terms of one's experience of privacy. And to explore that, all you need to do is think of what a middle class or upper middle class person would do if they desired more privacy than they have. You might say, well, I need more privacy. I need to move to a quieter neighborhood. I need to move to a mountaintop with 10 acres around me. Or I need to buy some more secure software to protect my personal information. Or I feel my privacy is really being violated, and so I need to hire a lawyer. Or I need to hire a carpenter to build a privacy fence. All of these things amount to a checklist of items that poorer people simply cannot do. If you look at professional people's expectations of privacy, just being able to have an office where you can shut the door versus the privacy of the person who works in the Quickie Mart, you see a marked difference. And then there's another, even more substantive difference under the surface of that. Privacy is a right, but it's a right that gets exercised only if you have something like a private life. Having a right to privacy and no private life is like having homeowner's insurance but no home, or like having a Fourth Amendment that protects your home from unwarranted searches, but your home being for sale because the mortgage has been foreclosed. So there are certain economic underpinnings that determine whether we are able to enjoy our privacy. And when those are pulled away from people, their right to privacy becomes increasingly abstract. And at the same time, our sense of belonging to the same family, the same species, the same nation, in short, the very social contract that upholds the notion of a right begins to erode.
In the book, you write about privacy as a value sort of based on the sacredness of the human person and their right to privacy as something sacred. And I think about that quote by Greta Garbo, you know, which has, of course, been made into, it's sort of been recast in some ways as proof of her eccentricism or her being a recluse, even though it's a line from a movie. But, you know, are you the Greta Garbo? Do you want to be alone? Do you want to be in your private space away from this society that is so voyeuristic?
No, I don't. And if I do, I am a crazy person indeed, because I choose to write books, which may be a private occupation, but it does involve being with other people. But I enjoy being with other people. I write usually a letter to a friend almost every day. And maybe part of my quarrel, as it were, with our voyeuristic culture, our exhibitionistic culture, is not so much because I see it as a threat to my solitude, at least so far I'm able to maintain my solitude quite well, but because it seems to be a threat to that very sociability. It doesn't have to do with people seeing each other's faces. One of my smart alecky questions always is, which of your Facebook friends empties the cat's litter box when you go on vacation? I want to live in community. I want to live in time and space, because living in time and space means living in a body. And I believe in the body, and I believe in the body politic. I don't see how you could believe anything else, because that's just a condition of mortal life. I am not a recluse, and I do not feel threatened by social interaction. I don't feel my privacy is being invaded. If somebody asks a question, a caring sort of question, but I care not to answer it, and they respect that. I think our privacy is most egregiously violated, not by sociability, but by asociability, by a culture where we're having all of these interactions with people that we don't work with, we don't struggle with, we don't suffer with, we don't die near. And that may be the great threat.
I want to thank you, Garrett Kaiser, so much for spending some of that time with us today.
And thank you so much for having me on your show.
Garrett Kaiser, author of several books, including The Unwanted Sound of Everything We Want, and he's a regular contributor to Harper's. In fact, an article he wrote about privacy became the basis for Privacy, the latest entry in Picador's Big Ideas Small Book series. For more on Garrett, the book, and the series, you can visit wordofmouthradio.org. Stay with us for the story of a New Hampshire monarch in the making, a man on a mission to build a medieval-style castle on a white mountain cliff.
I've been working on this for many years, and people always ask me, so when are you going to be done? I say, that's the wrong question, because this is my lifelong art project. I will never be done. The more important question is, when can you move in?
We'll hear more about an empire in progress when Word of Mouth continues.